Let's do
Love
it.
Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Empowerment Saturday, African American Empowerment. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Roma, coming to you live and in color. We got a great show for you today. Got Dr. Rogers on tap. My doctor with you. Brother George, Williman, Kwanzaa, you. It's family time, y'all. Join the party. Welcome, brother. Welcome, sister. Welcome one, welcome all to African American Empowerment Saturdays, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment. This is for you all, right? We've got a great show today. We do. We're going to talk about Dr. Woodson, right? And I know some of you are probably saying, Dr. Woodson, that man did a whole lot, right? Imagine if we could do in our time what he did in his time. And if you would understand the need, right, of our people, the desperate need of our people for education, for motivation, for improvement, right, for empowerment, then you'll see that we keep trickling down the information for education and correction for direction, educating our people on our history so that we understand what we need to do going forward. We can look back, that's Sankofa. We can look back to go forward because we have to be able to capture the mindset and the mentality of the era that this work was being done in. We're so-called free now. We have freedom to move around and freedom to do things, but are we using the tools, the fact that we have right in our hands, right in our grasp, right in front of us to educate our people, to become more empowered in our communities and in our families, developing strong, positive individuals. So with the NAAEA, the purpose is to empower, motivate, and inspire African Americans. That's it. Period. Right there. It stops. How do we do that? It's through the peace concept. Listen carefully. Politics. You have to understand as African Americans the importance of understanding the American political system and how it works. Imagine for a moment if we were effective at understanding the politics that hold us back. Right? Understanding the political system that keeps us incarcerated, the legal system that keeps us incarcerated, paying the bills for somebody else, keeping privatized prisons open because we don't understand the law and how it works. Imagine if we could navigate around those systems, right? And understand, for example, the legal system, right? And how the law works. And then we use that law in our favor until we make some other moves on the economic side. Right, because economics dictate, and we have the infrastructure in terms of using capital, but we don't use it in the right way. So if we learn economics, capitalism, and money management, we could make a drastic change in the condition that our people live in. Most of our people are starving, and they're suffering, right? They're suffering from lack of resources, right? Those tangible resources that just keep the lights on for many of us, right? In many of our cities, we are the majority of the population, but we're also living below the poverty line. We got to fix that. We have to do that collectively. And so the work has to be a collective work of understanding politics, which is the P, the political system, the law, how it works, how that whole system works of government. So and think about, as we continue to move forward, how we can begin to impact our communities if we learn how to govern ourselves, right? You can't run a country until you learn how to run a family. And you can't run a family until you learn how to run yourself. And so as we continue to manage ourselves, our ideas and our concepts, we're going to have to do a better job of looking at how we can improve, right? And that's one individual, one family, one community at a time. And if we do the work of developing stronger individuals, stronger children, stronger families, and stronger communities, things change. Let's go to the A. The A is simply athletics, health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. You got to take care of your body. I'll say it over and over again. You're going to have to do a better job. We are of taking care of our health, mental health, physical health, emotional health, spiritual health, social health, cultural health, and financial health and wealth. We're going to have to do that. We're going to have to make sure that we push away from the table right? All those refined processed products that we're consuming, right? All the chips and all those things that we know are not good for us, we're going to have the discipline to say no and push away. Get a good workout routine and a good regimen that you're taking care of your health. Your health is your wealth, brothers and sisters. And the C is relevant cultural programs like this one that educate us, right, on our history, on our culture, that gives us a framework and a roadmap to where we can go and how we can see ourselves and how we can use tools from the past to improve ourselves now. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with having a culture that really helps to refine your people, and that's what we need. And lastly, it's the E, a comprehensive education that really looks at developing our people individually, right, and collectively. We have to do the work of working on ourselves. And the only way that we're going to get that done is to educate ourselves and re-educate ourselves and capture and recapture our African minds. Now, Stan Mack in a moment. Be right back.
Man, Stan, can the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
My brother Stan is so right. He's not with us, but his words are. He said, we need institutions that define our own reality. Where in this country? We got them at HBCUs, but I think we have to do a better job of educating our people for our people, for our communities, for the issues that we face. We have to do a better job of doing the work of working on ourselves, on our families, and on our communities. The resources are there. Are they allocated properly? The institutions, some are there. We have to develop more, but we're going to have to do a better job of putting our children in position to compete and successfully for our future, for seats in the classroom, for business opportunities, and for just simple growth and development. And now it's time for our Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. Brother George, bring it. Oh, yeah. Hey, wife. Hey, mom.
Bring it. What?
Come on, y'all. George, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine, brother. Thank you for always inviting me and allowing me to participate with the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment. I really appreciate it, brother.
Thank you, sir. We need it. What you got for us today?
Yes, sir. Today, our Kwanzaa principle from the Nguza Saba is Kujichagulia, which is self-determination to define ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves. I think that's a powerful statement, the Kujichagulia, to define ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves. Something that we don't do nearly enough of, you know, to help our people to improve our condition in this system. Kujichagulia. This symbol represents patience, self-containment, self-discipline, and self-control. Without these things, we cannot grow to be responsible, well-balanced, and productive members of our family and our community. These qualities, along with honesty and respect for all living things, are essential to the development of our character and help to determine the course of our life, positive or negative, in this lifetime. Now, today with the Willie Lynch segment, I said last week that I had picked up a book by Dr. Boyce Watkins. And I read his intro to the book, why he wrote it, and what he thinks that the book could accomplish. And that was on the outside, on the back cover. And I told you that soon I would be reading something from within the book to to make his help make his case, because I think this is going to be a very good book. This is in the chapter called Be a Asset. Always be an asset to your family. That's chapter one. These failings in family and parenthood have become a massive emotional and financial drain on the family. Trillions in black wealth have been lost because of relatives who become liabilities to their loved ones when they should have been raised to be an asset. The problem is further compounded by the devaluation of motherhood, where we've been led to falsely believe that working for the boss in the factory is more important than spending time with your children. Sorry, but your oppressors taught you that nonsense. This is not who you are. One of the most valuable resources God endows you with at birth is the presence of people, those who are surrounding you when you're born, the family members that come, when your mother gives birth to you. All right, now I'm going to continue. Human life and labor are worth trillions, which we've known since the days of slavery. For hundreds of years, whites have been able to buy and sell slave labor for large sums of money, and even use it to back the acquisition of property. The point here is that your children, if you raise them properly, can become tremendous assets to your family's wealth. Now, he said a lot in all that, and it sounded as though it's like I already knew that type of, no, we don't already know that, because if we did, we would do it, you know. And so I just think that was very enlightening, because I watch how we raise our children, and we teach our little girls how to twerk and have our little boys, with their pants sagging before they even understand what it represents or anything, this is the way we raise our children. And then when they go to school and they have issues in school, you wonder why, when you sent them with coded language on them already. And so to you, to us, it might be fun, it might be time to laugh and all that. Now, the laughing and joking, like the last poets once said about black people, is that we like to party and bullshit and party and bullshit. And it's time for all that to end. And so when someone comes along with a solution that could be used for our people to improve our condition and get us back to where we once were, the creators and advocates of how civilization should be structured, we need to get back to that, and we'll go a long way, and all the resources that we need are right within us. So Brother Marvin, if you don't have any other questions for me, back to you.
I like that, Brother George. It's already in us. So here's the question for today. How, maybe this is a two-part question, your suggestion, can we become assets to our families again, each individual first? And then what are some keys to raising our children to become assets for ourselves, our families, and our communities?
Well, I'm going to answer that like this. When you focus on what really needs to be done, then that's the result that you'll get. In other words, teaching our children, that we was the Moors and that we accomplished a lot of great things, that's good. But by the same token, we also kind of set ourselves up for failure in that we're concerned with raising our children in a way that they can prosper before we teach them home training, before we teach them what their value is to the overall community and their overall family. They don't have no definition for that. That's why we end up belonging to gangs and different things, because that gives us purpose. We feel like that's a purpose. But see, the purpose needs to be given to our children at home so that they feel a part of a family unit and a community. And we haven't properly structured that so that our children would know that they have an assigned duty to represent us proudly in other communities. And our children are not taught that. And that's why we'll go around into other communities and behave any kind of way, because we haven't been raised to be proud of who we are and to strongly represent us as a people and as a community wherever we go. And that's your assigned duty. And to necessarily educate yourself to the point where you can defend the position that your family has. So that's my answer, brother. And I hope it wasn't too confusing.
Oh, I like it. I like it, Brother George. You said home training. At the top of the list, brothers and sisters, we need home training. And if we don't go back to having a system, an African-American-based system, a cultural system for developing our youth, developing our children, and insulating our families that we love and protect and lead and guide and support one another, that add value to each individual, worth and purpose, then we're going in the wrong direction. We need so desperately to get back to those values. Stop following other people. Back on track. That's the word for today. Brother George said it. Home training, value, work, and purpose. So that's it for our Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment. Thank you, Brother George. Great job. Great job. Now, some housekeeping notes. Today, if you want to ask a question of Dr. Rogers, right, and you don't want to actually do it through the call-in line, we have Slido at slido.com. Write that down for me, S-L-I-D-O.com. Go out there. The number 3997578, and you can just type in your comment right there. You could be anonymous and still get involved, because we need you. Without this dialogue, right, what is the show about? So we need you to chime in. Oh, if you want to be a part of the show doing the question and answer period, 845-277-9250 if you want to ask myself, Brother George, or Dr. Rogers a question, or if you just want to make a comment or a statement. Of course, we want to keep those comments brief so we can allow everybody to have an opportunity, but we do want to hear your voice. We want to hear you. So there are ways that you can do that. 845-277-9250 is the call-in number. This is African American Empowerment. It's family time. We're working on developing ourselves. Where else in the world is somebody saying it's time to focus on African-American empowerment, African-American youth, African-American family, African-American community, and then developing tools, political tools, economic tools, social and cultural tools to help us improve ourselves, that we can become better out of the experiences of American systems as they have been applied to us after generation after generation after generation. And now, without further delay, I think I got all my housekeeping in. Brother George, that's going over to Dr. Rogers. Oh, yeah. Y'all know how I do it. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Dr. Rogers, bring it.
Bring it. Mm-hmm. What?
Right here. Uh-huh. I like this. We right here. Call a friend. The number is 845-277-9250. We got Dr. Rogers in the house. Dr. Rogers, welcome. How are you?
Yeah, good morning. Good afternoon, brothers. How are you? I'm wonderful.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Okay, great. It's been a wonderful day. And, we definitely enjoying nice sunny weather. Yes, indeed.
Well, we want to dive down
like
back into
I'm sorry, Mormon, what did you say? What did you say?
I just wanted you to, I thought you said something.
Oh, no, I was just saying, I said, just enjoying this beautiful weather we got here.
You down in Florida?
Yeah, in Florida, yeah. Yeah, easy to do.
Teasing us. Brother Georgie teasing us. This beautiful weather. He didn't say it, right? I don't know if y'all know, but Dr. Rogers is up in the northern part of the country. He's taking a sabbatical to go down in there and get some of that good Florida sun. So he's teasing us here on the East Coast. They got some rain and cloudiness and some cool temperatures.
I was over at Bethune-Cookman College. And over with, you know, the home of the great Murray McLeod Bethune.
Mm-hmm.
Started that college with $1.50.
Mm. All right.
So, you know, you were talking about how do we empower our kids, you know, and that was a good question. I didn't hear all of it. But it's a question that requires us to go deep, you know, and ask ourselves, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
And that answer actually is the story of your life. So
that is true.
So all of the folks we've been talking about in our program, you know, you ask them that question, that's the story of their life, what they've been doing to empower our people, empower our families and children.
Okay, so I want to ask you a question, Dr. Rogers,
if
you don't mind, as it relates to Dr. Whitson, right? I'm thinking about how we can understand that mind of Whitson and his relationships, right? Because we have to understand the importance of fostering positive relationships, or his relationship with Booker T. Washington and his relationship with George Washington Carver and his relationship with trying to develop educational tools. Can you share just a bit about his strategies and his mindset in the era in which he lived?
Yes, yes. The number one factor, and all of our ancestors have said it at some point in time, you have to love your people. You have to love them, because if you love them, you will be committed. You will not let anything stop you from being committed to fighting and making change for them. And that's what you saw in Woodson. That's what you saw in Booker T. He loved his people. He wanted to see them change. He wanted to see a new day. He wanted to see a new life for his people. And he did everything possible, including to bring that biological genius. I'm talking about Booker T. Washington, the biological genius to the campus of Tuskegee to teach his students. He did that. And, you know, and what he did out of that was never been done again. And I've often wondered, why is it that we haven't built new institutions like a Tuskegee? And I think if you go back and you look, the last HBCU probably is going to be somewhere down in Alabama. I don't know if Dr. Bridges is on the line, but he might know. What was that last HBCU? And that has not been duplicated. We have not created any new institutions. We have not created any Tuskegees. And the ones that somehow or the other, some of the ones that we did create were basically religious schools. Schools like down in Atlanta, Morehouse, and Clark Atlanta. All that Morehouse complex down there in the Atlanta is basically, you know, out of religion. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but, you know, it didn't come from our origin, our psychological origin. It didn't come from our love for our people. It came from people that, you know, wanted to be paternalistic toward us. So I think we have to review that. And so we have to get back to the understanding you got to love your people.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, Dr. Rogers. What's the difference? Dr. Rogers?
Yes.
What's the difference, right? Like you said, I married McLeod Bethune, did it with $1.50, right? And that education was important and a priority. And Dr. Woodson focused on education as a priority. And like you just mentioned, that we're not building institutions, right? What happened? Why are we not building institutions?
Well, you know, one of the things that has always happened to us and to what the adversaries have always done is they throw money in the picture. And once you throw that money in there, you got a new animal. You got a new dynamics because of the fact that it's going to change everything. It's going to change the outlook. It's going to change the way you see and understand how things work because you want to go for the money too. And the mission and the initiation is not going to be the same. My father used to he went to North Carolina Central University under James E. Shepherd, and he didn't have any money, and so he went to Dr. Shepherd. And he told him, he said, listen, Dr. Shepherd, I really want to go to college. And he said, I don't have any money. And he said, Dr. Shepherd asked him, well, what you want me to do? He said, I want to see if there's any way you can help me. Is there any jobs that I can work? Is there anybody I can work for? He said, now that's the question I want to hear. Yeah, he said, yeah, it is. He said, go outside of my office there, and you'll see a bell. He said, I want you to ring that bell in the morning that lets the students know it's time to get up and get ready for lunch, breakfast. And then you'll ring it again to let them know it's time for class. And he said, if you can do that, you know, we can enroll you. And if you miss one day, we will unroll you. He said, so you got to be on time. And he very clearly was committed. He said he never missed a day ringing that bell. It was on an old antiquated bell. As a matter of fact, it's still sitting on the campus. No kind of sense. And he was very proud of himself. He did that. And eventually, down the line, Dr. Shepherd became close to him. He let him do other jobs, you know, around the campus. You know, he didn't care. He like clean his car, wash his car. He didn't care because he wanted to go to school. And his father was a sharecropper, and down from Hurtsville County, North Carolina. And he was a sharecropper, and he, you know, didn't have the money. He had like 13, 14 brothers. I know the big family. I know he used to go to the family reunion. Boy, be so many people in there. So that's the love that you have to have. Now, that's what James E. Shepherd did. And there are other stories like that of visionaries, men and women, you know, who do things like that and who were willing to do things like that. And it made a difference, you know. You heard Dr. Bridges talk about George Washington Carver. Carter Woodson used to go in a restaurant in the morning, sit down at the table and read the newspaper to the mine, to the coal miners. And that's a love for your people. Yeah, that's a love for your people that you can't find, you know, elsewhere. And then I looked at myself and said, well, what do I do? And I mean, really critique myself. And I did this in later years. I had been successful, you know, in terms of a working career and family. But, yeah, what am I giving back? I have to ask myself that. And one of the things I did is started a very large mentoring program in Milwaukee called Boys of Men. And I did it with a good friend of mine named Mr. Philip Scott. And we organized the mentoring program, but it was unique. We used a lot of our resources that we had built up in the community, you know, and got people to work with us, you know, people who were heads of department. We even got the governor of Butch Weston, at that time with Tommy Thompson. We got him to come forward and help us send these kids on a camp trip, a camping trip, with some funding, and he did. And, I mean, and that's not enough sometimes, but at least it motivates you in a way that lets you know that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and you just got to get out there and do it. There are people that will help you. So if that answers your kind of question, that's what I do. And then, you know, Woodson was connected, you know, because Woodson, basically what his thing was, he was in the printing business. Well, when I say that lightly, I don't mean that was his main business, but he had the press. You know, he had the presses. And you have to have a press, you know, obviously, to be successful in that world. And so he had the access to a press, which is how he printed some of the publications he did. And some of them he used other presses. He used the black newspapers as a source of doing that. And then he went to Carter Woodson. He went to Booker T to ask him about doing some of the publications that George Washington Carver had been doing. And George Washington Carver was writing pamphlets on how to grow peanuts a little bit better, how to grow good, strong tomatoes, things like that, so that the people in Tuskegee could have access to that kind of material. You know, that's not money. They didn't get rich. George Washington Carver did not cash his paycheck. The bookkeepers at Tuskegee used to call Mr. Carver or write Mr. Carver and ask him, Mr. Carver, could you please cash your check from 2 months ago because we want to be messing up our books. And we need you to cash your check. He didn't work for money. He slept in a one-room place. It wasn't glory and glamour. It was the love of his people. And
so I'll kind of hold it back. See if you got another question. Obviously, there.
Yeah, I'm here. I was trying, somebody was telling me I had an echo in my phone. Is it still there?
No, sir.
Brother George, is the echo still there?
No, sir. No, sir.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Dr. Rogers, so we're talking about Carter G. Woodson, right? And he is the founder of Negro History Month. You talked about him using the print material. Now, we're in a more, I would say, more technology-savvy era, but we still can use print. How do we go about disseminating information at this point in the same way in which Dr. Woodson wanted to use to empower and educate our people?
And, you know, it's really the same way because back here a couple of years ago, they had to stop printing the Journal of Negro History, which is one of the most powerful academic journals for African people in the nation because they couldn't find a printer. I'm not sure who was originally printer, but they stopped. The university official said we don't have the funds to do that anymore. So they stopped. And then Morehouse stepped in and started publishing it to do that. So it's the same thing. It's the same thing to do that. It requires the same kind of effort. A lot of times it's just connection to people. You know, these are doctors and lawyers, you know, men of power and women of power. They got access to stuff. You know, we need to have that. We need to have, because most now, today, most of your magazines and things like that are printed by white companies. They're printed, there's one printed by, most of them are printed by this company out of Wisconsin. I can't think of the name of it right this second. But they print a lot of big magazines like Jet, Ebony, Life, Playboy, stuff like that. They print all those magazines. And they do that out of Wisconsin. And it's the same method. You gotta be able to grab. It's access. It's access to resources. It's using your resources to go to people and present yourself in a way to get them to understand what you're trying to do. And that's one of the reasons why now the black press is dead.
Mm.
They don't have any rights because in order to print a black newspaper, you have to have what's called a web press. And a web press is very expensive. Now today they use electronic and they use some kind of other thing, but that's still expensive. And so you know it's still difficult. But all of the black newspapers, Bone, Black Magazine, especially I think Essence is still around, right? You know, because these were landmark magazines. Landmark. Ebony was owned by John Johnson. And John Johnson was the richest black man in America at one time. But he couldn't keep that level of activity up. So he had to give it up. Black Enterprise. Earl Grey wrote it. Lost that steam. Oprah. Oh. Much money she got. He'll give it up. Kind of, I think she did give it up for something to that effect. Had to download, downsize it or something. So, but as you see, you go to the magazine stand, Wagner's still up. Fortune. Still there. What's the magazine? And all those others. So I think that's the way we got to look at it. We got to use the, see, those brothers use and sisters use their resources. All of them printed newsletters for their schools. They printed journals for their schools. And they use that as a means of teaching. Yeah, they use it. And that was one of the problems, like I heard Dr. Bridges say it last week. When he went to the printer, printed book, you know, he thumbed it. And they know the power in the print.
Mm-hmm.
The power in the press. I think it was Lenin, the Russian philosopher Lenin. He said, if you want to start a revolution, start a newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still true. If you want to start a revolution, start a newspaper. You can get the whole lot of folks.
Can I get a question in, though?
Go right ahead, sir.
Oh, okay. Dr. Rogers, in the pre-show, you know, interview that we had with you, you spoke something about Carter G. Woodson was trying to put together some type of things to deal with African-American health. Could you speak a little bit about that?
And that was borrowed from Carter Woodson. That was borrowed from George Washington Carver. Because if you go to the Carver Museum, you'll find a whole wall full of books on how to grow tomatoes, how to grow peanuts, how to grow sweet potatoes, how to grow this, how to grow that. You find that now. And it's kind of it's valuable. I bought some when I was there with a group of young people. And, it's kind of antiquated, but it's all right. And so it's still for sale. Dr. Woodson also, George Washington Carver also had invented a system that could take arthritis out of your joints. It was a very powerful oil. And the reason I know is Dr. Bruce Bridges used to sell it in his bookstore. And I remember buying, so I bought a whole case. Get rid of this arthritis. I bought a whole case, took it home, and it worked. I mean, it really worked. So I went back, when I got back to the University of Wisconsin, I told one of my colleagues, who was also suffering from arthritis like that, I told her and her husband, about it. They bought a case. And it worked for them. And they came back, they said to me, they said, Bill, thank the Lord. Thank the Lord. He's a miracle. I said, you thank George Washington Carver. And like I said, I don't know if Dr. Bridges is on. He can probably tell you the name of that. He said it's somewhere still available. I was just wondering where it is.
All right, let me see if I can get him in. He's online. We bring Dr. Bridges in. Dr. Bruce, are you there?
Been here the whole time, brother.
Hey, my good
Welcome,
brother.
Sir.
How you doing?
Hey, all right, Dr. Rogers. All right, Dr. Rogers, Brother Marvin, Brother George, right here with you. Uh-huh. Yeah, I wanted to, go ahead, Brother Marvin.
No, I think Dr. Rogers mentioned something that he was referring that you had brought up as a topic in conversation.
Oh, yeah, he mentioned a couple of things up about me. One was the colleges, and he also mentioned about that oil that I used to sell for arthritis. And he's right. It was an oil that I used to sell in my store, the old bookstore. And by the way, Brother Marvin, we have another caller on who I this number to. He's head of a leading black business organization here in North Carolina. So when you start going to the line, you might want to engage him and talk to him. I told him Dr. Rogers was on, and you know, so he probably tuned in. But anyway, that oil was I can't remember the name of it, Bill, but it was a Dr. Curtis, who was one of the best students of Dr. George Washington Carver at Tuskegee.
Right, that's what I was telling Brother Marvin today on the phone.
About Dr. Curtis.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Curtis graduated and started his own business, I think, in Detroit, Michigan, and he started making that oil. And I used to buy it from his people because he's deceased, but I used to buy it from his people. And if you look at some of the programs on about George Washington Carver on YouTube or on the Internet, you'll see his students, and his students, I can't remember Curtis's first name, but Dr. Curtis is one of his best students, and he's in a lot of those photographs of Dr. Rogers in the laboratory in the white lab coats at Tuskegee. And Dr. Curtis is the one that put that oil out. Now, another thing you mentioned too, Dr. Rogers, I want to mention is the HBCUs. Now, the first HBCU, the oldest HBCU, I should say the newest, not the newest HBCU is one in Nashville, Tennessee. And as you said, it's a Bible school, started with Bible money. It's called the American Baptist College in Nashville. Uh-huh. And they just applied for a designation to the United States Department of Education to become a historically black college and university. And it's the 106th higher education institution in the country. It's the 106th HBCU in the United States. And since 2013, it's called the American Baptist College in Nashville. So I wanted to answer that question. And also, I wanted to mention when you were talking about the money for the HBCUs, you know, Morris Brown just got his accreditation back just a couple of years ago. And I was just reading this morning, it's funny you talk about it, Dr. Rogers, I was just reading this morning about the college that Mary McLeod Bethune went to, which was Barbara Scotia. And Barbara Scotia is in Charlotte, North Carolina. And Barbara Scotia right now is trying to become accredited again. They have only 4 students, not on the campus. They have a campus, so those who might not know, in Concord, North Carolina, say Charlotte. But Concord is about 5-10 minutes outside of Charlotte. But Barbara Scotia has a campus, but they have only 4 students online. The school lost money, then lost accreditation, and the campus is sitting there with no students on the campus, just 4 who take classes online, and they're trying to get back going. As a matter of fact, the Alumni Association for the school had a reunion the other day, and they're really talking about trying to get Barbara Scotia back open. And Barbara Scotia was one of the prominent historically black colleges in the United States. And as I said, I'm repeating this, that's where Sister Mary McLeod Bethune went to school. And I read her autobiography.
They had a basketball team and a football team, didn't
they? Oh, yeah, they had basketball. Matter of fact, good friend of mine, about 7-foot, Guy Garcia Howard, was a basketball player for Barbara Scotia College. And they had a basketball team and a football team. They were really a regular HBCU. But the first thing
I remember that.
Mm-hmm. But, and when you read the autobiography of Mary McLeod Bethune, she always talks about wanting to go to Scotia College. Scotia College. I got to go to Scotia. And she didn't have much money, as you said, Dr. Rogers. And she, it was about $1.50 or so, but she made it to Scotia College. So then, because that's what she's called, but it's Barbara Scotia in Concord, North Carolina.
Right.
And another thing I wanted to mention, then I'm gonna be quiet, and that is,
you know,
I was just
too, maybe you could talk a little bit about Dr. Briggs. You know, actually, Mary McLeod Bethune was motivated and mentored by this powerful black woman teacher called Mary Lucy Langley.
That's right. Right. Yeah. Matter of fact, I think that was kind of her inspiration, I think, for even going to college. Lucy Lehman,
right. Lucy Lehman, yeah.
Right.
And Lucy Lehman.
And I'm trying to think, too, Lucy Lehman. Something in Raleigh is named in her honor today. I think there's a hall on the campus of St. Augustine's College named after her, Lucy Lehman, because of her inspiration to black students and also especially Mary McLeod Bethune. That's right.
But these were people who loved their people. They loved their people.
You have to be in this kind of work because you take all kinds of criticism, castigation, people talking about you, cussing you out, and you know, speaking of loving people too, I was just reading before we came on too about Brother Matula Shakur. He's supposed to be released on the 16th of December. The stepfather of Tupac Shakur, and also one of the leaders in the Black Liberation Army. He's ill now, and so the United States, as many of our listeners know, just released him from jail after 35 years of a 60-year sentence. They just finally granted him parole after denying him parole 9 times. They finally granted him parole. And the only reason the United States racist, barbaric government allowed to release Matula Shakur was because of his health. So what white America does is when a black man who stands up for his people becomes incarcerated and is no longer of any use to his people and can't, quote unquote, cause any so-called problems for white America, that let you out. You see, that's really what it is. And Matula is being released on the 16th. So I did want to mention that and want people to kind of watch the news for that release of Matula Shakur after 35 years. And he's an acupuncturist, and he's received his doctorate degree in prison. So he got education. He was educating other inmates, doing everything to have gotten a parole many years ago. But they denied him 9 times and finally granted him parole after 35 years. And Jamil El-Amin, H. Rap Brown, is still in jail right now today.
Hmm.
So those are just some of the.
That's a toughie. because that was a police officer. Yeah. That was a police officer, so that's a tough fight. But you got to keep the lawyer Dan Folio.
Oh yeah, police officer. That's right. I had forgotten that, and that was the case with Mumia Abu-Jamal too. It was a police officer. That's what it was. Police officer with Mumia, and Brother Mumia is still incarcerated, but he was given a life sentence. But you're right. That's right. Mm-hmm. So, Brother Martin, that's just some of the things I had on my mind. And like I said, I know it's Dr. Rogers' program today, but I want to, you know, just make those comments.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. But I do want to ask you and Dr. Bruce a question. When it comes to...
And I'm still in Richmond next week. Y'all haven't...
Yes, sir. You better believe it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to make sure you... Because I hadn't heard it mentioned today, but I'm sure maybe I missed it, but...
Got that coming on the roster. It's on the roster, sir. On the roster.
Okay.
So I want to ask you, Dr. Rogers, a question in relationship to higher education. Like, we lost St. Paul's College, and the university or the college, the Bible college that you talked about, is in somewhat of decline. And so what do you think are some ways in which we can begin to support these institutions of higher education? And on the backside of that, we need to better prepare our young people to fill these seats at these universities, right? So it comes from the either public or private sector in terms of preparing our students to go to these universities. What do y'all think about that?
Yeah, not to take up too much time. I think as I was reading about Barbara Scotia, they said that the main reason that Barbara Scotia closed, the accreditation came second. But the first problem was lack of money. They have to be funded. Money has to be fueled into those institutions. And see, that's where these programs like yours and other media people need to put the word out to some of our so-called celebrities and people with money to start putting some money into our black colleges and hiring qualified people to run those colleges and to teach those classes. An example, just briefly, Kyrie Irving just with the whole situation with the Hebrews to Negroes, but I read, I'm sure most of y'all read too, that the next day an article came across my phone where Kyrie Irving went back to a Muslim school that he went to in was it Harlem or the Bronx? I think it's in the Bronx, New York, and gave them $60,000. That's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. So they do all this hollering about Kyrie Irving and what he did, talk about white people, talk about the Jews, all that, and he hates anti-Semitic, all that madness. But he went back the next day and met, and I saw a picture of him and one of his former teachers, and he gave the school $60,000 in support of the Muslim school and what they had done for him and when he grew up. So this is why he makes it, not the only reason, but part of the reason he makes the kind of statements he makes and does what he does, and people don't understand him. He went to a Muslim school as a youngster, and he went back to give money to that school. And that's the same thing that has to be done to some of these black colleges if they're trying to do something and put the word out. And you know, so anyway, so I'm going to give it over to Dr. Rogers because I know you want to go to your phone lines. But anyway.
And that's a good point.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce.
How many people put money into their alumni fund, stuff like that, pay for scholarships for young people, those kinds of things. How many people, there are other ways you can do it too. It's not the only way. That's a critical piece. And then also I wanted to just kind of mention, and I wanted to ask Dr. Bridges, I told you I wanted to ask him this question. At any point, were you trying to do Recapturing the African Mind as a textbook to use for class?
I have. No, I wasn't. I don't know. What do you mean? Now, was I trying? What you mean? Let me try to understand what you asked me first.
Well, you know, I was talking about Woodson spent a lot of his life trying to create a textbook.
You said textbook. I didn't hear what you said. Okay, no, I did have some people, Doc, from Chicago, not some people, but a brother who runs an independent school in Chicago, Illinois, and he ordered about 600 of my books to be used in his private little black independent school in Chicago as a text for a course. He did that. But as far as me trying to really do it myself, no, I was in the store. If anybody wanted to order it, yes. But to answer the question, no, not like Dr. Woodson did on the level that Dr. Woodson did. I didn't, but one brother did order about 600 and said he was going to use it for his course. And I think, what'd you say?
Let me use it as a textbook for a course I was teaching called Black Reality.
Right.
And
what happened?
Yeah, they said no. They said we want to do something a little bit more open. You know, a lot of the members of the faculty committee that would make that decision were fine.
And a lot of them were probably black people too, weren't they?
Right.
A lot of them were probably African Americans, weren't they?
Yeah, right. They were foreigners. They were
Oh, foreigners. I didn't hear. Okay, I couldn't hear you. There were foreigners. Well, you know foreigners are definitely not going to want that. Okay, there were foreigners. Okay, I got you. But, yeah, those are the kinds of books that we need. But as you know, and Brother George and Brother Marvin and I spoke about it last week, the way the school system is today, they don't want that kind of material in the school. They don't want the critical race theory. They don't want teachers, to social studies teachers, to teach about slavery. So I don't know. Hey, people are going to just be ignorant for the most part, unless we have some independent schools. But if you think you're going to get it in the public school, you can just forget it. It's not going to happen because teachers are going to be too inhibited. And they're going to be ill at ease about talking about slavery, uncomfortable about talking about the atrocities of coming across in the Middle Passage. They're going to just not going to be, and the possibility of losing their job, not just of making this white students feel bad, which is one reason that has been put forth for not teaching this kind of information. But by the same token, if it's taught and then students begin to complain, then, hey, somebody might be looking to unemployment for a paycheck.
Right.
So it's becoming very, the United States of America is becoming very dumbed down, very dumbed down. It really is.
Right. And, you know, so.
All right, thank you.
Remember, Woodson had his sister. I can't remember her name right this minute. He had a black woman. And in fact, you and I talked about it 1 week.
Oh, yeah, I met her up in D.C. at the association's headquarters where you go buy his books and things. She was a secretary and she ran the office.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, I met that sister years ago. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, doctors, we're going to have to get over to the line. We got a few things over on Slido. We got line pretty full today, pretty full. So let's go over to Slido first. This is the question that we have for you, Dr. Rogers and Dr. Bruce. When do we as African Americans get back to our three tribe based system, Maya, Olmec, Aztec, as the true Mesoamericans? That's when we can thrive as a people. Three tribe system. Any takers on that? Dr. Rogers, Dr. Bruce.
Okay. I think we would have to look deeper at Dr. Van Sertima's work and what he was trying to tell us about those systems and how they would fit in, you know, with our culture, because we are Africans. Africa has a unique system. It is similar to a lot of that. And so I think if you're trying to look at it as a survival mechanism, I think we have to do a much closer assessment of how it could be used in a community. Because basically, down in Mexico, right now, there are definitely African nations. There are African people that live in Mexico that are all met. Look at the beautiful Caribbean island down there in Mexico that all black folk live. Can't think of it right now. But that's an example. and then if you think about it, one of the things that that island has is that it has a in terms of its community, the influx of the profane world has flowed into it, and drugs, alcohol, prostitution, child trafficking has got involved. Now, not that that doesn't mean, so to the caller that asked that question, it doesn't mean it can't be done. It's just that I think we got to take a closer look at that. And so I'll leave it to Dr. Bridges to pick up from there.
All right, yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, and since you mentioned it too, Dr. Rogers, those cultures, as you said before, I don't know if I can really add to what you said, but it reminds me of our little dialogue, Brother Marvin and Brother George, from last week. The old Mex, the Aztecs, and those Inca civilizations. And since that particular conversation last week, I went back and began to, and there's so much information, as Dr. Rogers said, about the original inhabitants of this part of the earth being dark-skinned people. You see, whatever we call them, Africans or indigenous, as Brother George says, or original, or whatever we want to call them, they were dark-skinned people who were here first. I mean, so that's about all I can say. I'm going to let you go on to your calls, Brother Mom. I don't want to get back into that today. But that person on Slido, that those are our cultures, our culture and our heritage, no question about it.
Yeah, it's definitely our culture.
All right. All right, let's go over to the lines now. 2103. And before I get to that, 845-277-9250. If you want to call in and have a question or thought or comment, right, this is open dialogue, open forum time where your ideas matter, right? Your thoughts matter about how we can improve ourselves or any condition or situation that we find ourselves in. All right, 2103, you're next, you're live, and you're on. You have Dr. Rogers, Dr. Bruce, Brother George, and myself. Do you have a question, comment, or statement? 2103, go on once. All right. Let's try 3347. 3347, you're up next. You're live. You're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce, Dr. Rogers, Brother George, and myself?
That's my brother, right. I believe, Brother Marvin. I think my African brother. I think that's my brother from Durham, North Carolina, Brother Herbie's brother, I think. Is that right? He listens, but he normally doesn't say anything.
Okay.
Maybe he's not saying
all
anything
right.
today, too, there.
All right. Let me see if I can get up. Let me
that's
go
four,
over
that's
to...
That brand new caller
yeah.
for the first time, I gave you that 475. Did you?
Yeah, they dropped off.
Oh, he's not on now?
No.
Okay.
All right, let's go over to 9282. 9282. Do you have a question, comment, or statement?
Yes, good afternoon, brothers. Let me begin by saying may peace be to everyone that's in the sound of my voice. And I want to start today briefly by saying I want to give praises to Almighty God, Allah, for giving me the ability and bringing out the God in me to be able to learn and see the things that I have begun to see in the later years of my life. And I want to ask a question. And my question is, do we understand or have ever asked what the goal of slavery was? And I just recently got into this myself. What was the goal of slavery? And I believe slavery had a goal. And I think that goal was to develop and produce freed slaves. And so then I asked another question, are you a free black man or are you a freed slave? Because there is a difference. There is a difference. And as you and Brother George and Dr. Rogers was talking earlier, how do we teach our children? How do we focus?
All right.
We've got to focus on ourselves first. And then we will show our children how to act, how to study, how to learn, show them who they are. Because, see, now we are teaching our children and showing our children how to be freed slaves. And there's a difference. That's what we are, freed slaves. Because, as I said before, back in 1865 on that January 30th date or whatever it was, if we were truly free when they opened up the gates to the plantation and said, okay, y'all go now, y'all, we done freed y'all. If we were truly free black men and women, we would have left here. We would not have stayed. Now we are freed slaves engulfed in the belly of the beast. And that's what this system is. And I'll leave it with this. Another word for a freed slave, there's a lot of them, But you know what my word is for a free slave, don't you, brother? Do I have to say it?
Nigga.
Oh,
yes, sir.
Oh.
That's it. It's also Negro, colored, boy, MF, all those terms are freed slaves, brother. And that's what we're acting like in this system. We are freed slaves, not free black people, freed slaves. Y'all see what it said? Dion is now preparing to take a job at Colorado? Head coaching job at Colorado?
Yeah, I just saw that a little while ago.
You see what I'm saying? Now, see, that's a freed slave. Because if and I believe it was Dr. Rogers that mentioned earlier, we have to love ourselves. You have to love your people when he's talking about Carter G. Woodson. You have to love your people. And that starts with loving yourself as a black man or black woman. And if I love me, I'm going to Jackson State to lift up Jackson State and do what's right for my people. And ain't no amount of money or no other job in the white community going to take me from that. Because I know who I am. But when we doing commercials on national TV, worldwide TV, and we should have known what was coming because we are freed slaves, brothers. That's all we are. We are freed slaves. And we must understand that. We must, like I said about the one, we must be honest with ourselves first and foremost and recognize our situation, analyze our situation, and then say, yep, that's what we are. We free slaves. Now what are we going to do about it?
All right.
We got to stop wondering what's wrong
thank
with
you,
our
brother.
Children. Yes, sir, and thank you, brother, for the opportunity.
Oh, one other thing. I do want to announce that we got Dr. Bruce coming to Richmond on next Saturday, right?
Yes,
and
sir.
Because
yes,
Dr. Bruce is coming on next Saturday, we will also have our newsletter. So can you give the listeners and now our readers just a glimpse into the newsletter that we put together that will be on display at the meeting? But you can get your copy if you talk. But let's, just for a minute, share with our audience about the newsletter that we produced and put out there that will be out on next Saturday.
Yes, sir. It's called Peace. It was Wisdom, but we changed the name to Peace. It's going to have an article by that Dr. Bruce did, that that brother, one article I left out that we did not include, but it's going to have Dr. Bruce's article that's going to be a continuation of article on black history. And Brother George going to have an article in there on peace, and I've got an article in there on actual peace itself and the unification and what that means and what that requires. And, of course, we got an ad in there about Dr. Bruce being here next Saturday, and hopefully I actually will have copies of it on Monday. Because it's at the printers
right
now, and I think it. Well, I don't want to talk about how it looks and all that, because it looks. I mean, it looks important for our distribution and so forth. But it's more important is about what's in it, and what's being said, and so forth. So I think if you read it, when you see it and read it, I think people are going to really like what they see and appreciate what the brothers are saying in peace.
All right. And again, that is our offering, right, that Dr. Rogers, where we talked about Dr. Woodson being able to put information out, disseminating information out into the community, and we're making an effort. So kudos to Brother Booker for putting that together, our editor. We appreciate you, brother. We thank you.
Thank you, brother. If you hold on one second, Brother Marvin, I can actually give you exactly what's going to be in the newsletter as soon as it pops up here on my computer screen.
Okay.
It's popping up right now. We've got on the front page, of course, we got the article Remembering Black Power Through Its Literature, and that's Dr. Rogers. Then we got Brother George's article on Reeducating the Black Community, and then we've got the article on Peace and Economics, which I did, and then we got a continuation on Dr. Rogers article, and we got a nice couple of nice ads of featuring some sponsors of the newsletter, and it's going to be quarterly, and it's just, you know, getting us started, brother. But I think everyone will appreciate what's in it.
All right, thank you, Brother Booker. Become a sponsor, become a member, and remember, next Saturday at 3:30 p.m. the time has changed. 3:30 p.m. in Richmond, Dr. Bruce will be live and in color. So if you can, come on out, join us. We're going to have a great day together in fellowship. And again, next Saturday, 3:30 p.m., downtown library. If you need information on it, get in touch with myself or Brother George or Dr. Bruce, and we'll make sure we get that information to you. If you got any questions, you can contact me, 804-484-0736. Thank you again, Brother Booker. We appreciate you. And
yes,
now
sir,
we'll go to the
brother.
Lines. All
yes,
right.
Sir.
Back to the lines. 8856. Nope, that's wrong. Sorry about that, 8856. I'm going to 4756. Got your hand up, so you must have a question. 4756, welcome to the show. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Rogers, Dr. Bruce? Brother George and myself.
Greetings, this is Brother Warren. Am I coming through clearly?
Hey, Brother Warren.
Yes, sir. Okay, because I got Bluetooth in the car, and I want to make sure I come through clearly there. Yeah, what I want to say is that I just want to challenge all of the listeners that after we listen to excellent programs like this and we watch our few little YouTube videos, nothing substitutes study like getting a good book by an African author and reading a book from cover to cover. Because a lot of times when people write books and then they give interviews, they're not able to share every minute detail that they have in the book. But nothing substitutes study, serious study, in order to devise an effective strategy to move us forward. And I think we have become lazy with social media. We watch a lot of YouTube videos by all type of people who really won't qualify to do anything. And we just roll with what we hear, what somebody says. And we have excellent pieces of literature, nonfiction literature, that African-American, Afro-Caribbean, Afro-South Pacific people have written about our experience, about the nature of this society. And we should become very schooled in geopolitics. We should understand political economy. And it's very unfortunate that very few black people are able to articulate the issues as it relates to Russia and Ukraine and how that affects the African community. And so we must read Slavery and Capitalism by Eric Williams and How Europe Underdeveloped Africa by Walter Rodney. So I just wanted to just issue that challenge. We cannot substitute for actual study. We in school, you have to take those notes and prepare for an exam, which means you have to read and you have to be able to answer questions, write short essays to defend your position you came to. And this is what we got to do as a people. So when we're encountering misinformation, or as the white folks use disinformation, that's always been directed at us, by the way, we must be able to articulate a position based off logic, based off facts, based off historical, archival documentation, and not be so lazy to just rely on YouTube videos. Nothing wrong with watching YouTube videos. I watch them too, but I always go back to my personal library to strengthen my consciousness to be prepared for battle. Thank you, Brother Mark.
Thank you, Brother Warren. Appreciate it. Thank you for calling in and checking back in with us. We appreciate that and your dialogue on last week as well. All right, Dr. Rogers, Dr. Bruce, any comments to Brother Warren's statement?
Nothing at all, except I agree with him 100%. We can keep it moving. I definitely agree with him 100%.
All right, Dr. Rogers.
You know, we didn't.
All right, we got to study.
Back during the days of Woodson Carter, and you know, those powerful minds, you know, they did this off of just pure research. So
And a lot of the research that you see on YouTube is research coming from them. They just tweak it their way. So you're right.
All right. Like Brother Warren said, we got to do a better job of studying and researching. All right, let's go over to 1140. You're next. You're live and you're on. Dr. Rogers, Dr. Bruce, Brother George, and myself, do you have a question, a comment, a statement? 1140.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome to the show.
Okay, yes. I'm Larry Borden with the Greater Durham Black Chamber of Commerce. We support the black entrepreneur, the black business, and the black business ecosystem here in Durham. We have approximately 200 members that we support. I just wanted to come in and say hello, and I'm enjoying the program very much. And I'm here through Dr. Bruce. And thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you. We need to connect because we need to push that economic piece, right? That economic piece, that Chamber of Commerce, effectively working in our communities, help us to empower ourselves financially and economically. We could definitely got to talk. Thank you, sir, for calling
in. Thank you.
All right. Let's go on over to 9116. 9116. Are you available? Do you have a question, comment, statement?
Yes, good evening.
Good evening.
About Mutulu Shakur. And he's one of the radicals, you know, locked up for being as such a radical for our people, you know, black people, black folk, whatever you want to call them. Our radicals always pay the price, you know. And but he always singled out too. Their radicals run the world in a small number, which is the police on a local level, you know, SWAT, whatever you want to, you know, on and on, such and such. Their radicals keep us in place when we decide to rise up. So who can we look to be radical and move forward for us? Having such a outlook and a consequence to pay with these singled out leaders, we need to develop leadership programs so it won't be singled out leaders and show these radicals with this reckless energy, which is mostly the youth, with how to use that energy. That's all I got to say for today.
All right, thank you, brother. Appreciate you calling. Stay plugged in. I appreciate you. All right. We got about 6 minutes left in the show. And I wanted to go back over to Slido for a minute, Dr. Bruce and Dr. Rogers. We've got a few comments over here I want to take up. The question is from Slido, what is your position on the new black scholarship? What is your position on the new black scholarship with new theories that may not agree with the older scholarship? What's your position on the new black scholarship and with the theories that may not agree with the older scholarship? Dr. Rogers, Dr. Bruce.
You know, Dr. Bridges, I remember asking, and I think I told you about this, I asked John Henry Clark one day when he came to the museum in Milwaukee, that I asked him, I had heard that he, Elijah Muhammad, used to send Malcolm up to his house on Saturday afternoon to study. And he said, that's right, my brother. Every Saturday afternoon, he came to my house, and we would study, and we would read books. And he said, I used a lot of the stuff we had from the old Harlem History Club. And so I guess the new and old is really the same, I would say. And it's that I don't see any new scholarship. I don't see any. I haven't seen it. The only new scholarship I've seen is the scholarship that's addressing LGBT and the feminist movement.
Hmm. Okay. Dr. Bruce, any comments on that?
Yeah, yes, sir. I really agree with what Dr. Rogers said, and didn't know exactly what the caller was asking, but he is right. I guess the new information, the only thing different is the LGBTQ faction of scholarship, because now pretty much this, even the critical race theory that's coming out and other things that are being said, is pretty much what we've been going over for many, many, many years, maybe a little different twist on it. But I was going back just the other day looking at some things that Jay Rogers wrote, and even though I have read some things that have just come out by some of the new, so-called new scholars, I look back and I say, Jay Rogers had talked about that 40, 50 years ago. Now, the new scholars may embellish upon it, or may do some revisions or add right. to it. That's right. That's what it is. But the knowledge has been out there, and I kind of was surprised because I had overlooked this particular bit of information that I was looking into Jay Rogers for, because I've been hearing some of the younger scholars talk about it, but Jay Rogers talked about it. But like I said, it is being embellished, it is being revised, and talked about maybe from a little different perspective, but the basic information is the same, and that is that the African man and woman are the original human beings on the face of this planet, and everything else that we see today is really an outgrowth of that creation by black people.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. And now we got one last Slido, and then we got to go to final comments. The last Slido for today, are there any other health remedies that Dr. George Washington Carver created? Any other health remedies?
Ooh. I'm going to let Dr. Rogers handle that right quick. That's a whole lecture in the doc.
Okay, repeat the question once more.
Are there any other health remedies that Dr. George Washington Carver created?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
that's another show, the doc.
Yeah, that was one of the critical. You know, again, going back to the love for our people. You know, our people were struggling. They were living in Tuskegee. See, Tuskegee was a big cotton-producing town, and what happened when you produce cotton? Cotton eats up all of the you know, nutrients out of the soil, and so you can't grow nothing. You can't grow anything. But some of the health things, you know, obviously.
All right, we got 1 minute. 1 minute, Dr. Rogers. 1 minute.
Oh, okay, right. So, yeah, that was one. And then another one, which black people had a problem with, was their feet. You know, toe fungus. He created a toe fungus product.
And like I said, brother Marvin and Dr. Rogers, Dr. Rogers agree with this. That can be another whole program, can't it, Bill?
Say it once more.
That can be another whole program.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So,
all right. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up here. Thank you, Dr. Rogers.
For this, Brother Marvin. And the world, as David Ruffin said, will be better for this.
True. So we want to thank Dr. Rogers, Brother George, Dr. Bruce.
I'll be looking forward to seeing
Bruce.
All your people in Richmond next Saturday afternoon about this time, too. I'll be there next Saturday afternoon, Brother Marvin, Brother George.
Yes, sir.
All right. Until that time. Continue to be positive, right. Peaceful, and productive. Hope to see you in Richmond on Saturday. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. Have a great week, and continue to motivate, empower, and inspire our people to become the best that they can be today, each day, every day, one day at a time. Have a great week. Be positive,
all right.
And be peaceful.